Hello, ghouls and ghoulettes, and welcome to the Gospel of Ghost, the podcast that aims to bring the lore and narrative of Ghost to the forefront of their music. My name is Niall, and today I'm joined by a very special guest, a returning guest from the very first episode of the show. It's Chris, aka Pickles. How have you been?
Nice to be back. You know, it's been a while. First episode and all.
Oh, yes, you were on the third episode. Of course. Elizabeth,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. I like that one.
I like that one. It was very intense on, like, the detail finding on that, especially for the narrative of the album.
Yeah, it's been so long, I just completely forgot. I completely forgot he was on the show. No, that was great. That was the murder mystery episode of the podcast.
Basically, yes.
Yeah, it was good. But yeah, since we've talked, not much has happened in the ghost world, obviously, because there's been a massive worldwide pandemic going on. But have you, you know, the stuff that we have seen, did you see the cover that Papa forwarded of Rolling Stones?
Is that the one from the... where they did the Swedish TV show?
Yes, it was him and the helicopters, and they covered Sympathy of the Devil.
I do remember watching it. I can't remember if it was that song, because they did two or three songs I saw for that.
I don't know, it was definitely just that one. It was just that one, because I would know.
I swear there was something else I saw.
No, it was definitely just that one, and it was fantastic.
Then more than likely, yes, I have seen that one then.
Yeah, I really want an in-studio release of that song, to be honest, because it was just amazing.
Yes. No, that would have been absolutely perfect. You know, where they did the EP with the different covers, like Missionary Man and stuff like that.
Yeah, that would be
perfect on that.
Or even like their extended editions. They tend to put on a couple of cover songs on their extended editions as well.
Yeah, I mean they've been doing that ever since the first album with
Here Comes the Sun.
That's it, Here Comes the Sun, which was on the Japanese release only.
It was, yes. Well done. Not a lot of people know that. They also played at gigs. For some reason, that was like one of their songs they played during their first shows.
Well, you say that. When I saw them on the tour they did in the UK, I don't think I remember seeing them play that one live.
When was that?
Oh, crikey, on the first album release, that was.
Oh, really? So you've seen them during Papa? You've seen them during Papa when they didn't play that?
I'm pretty sure. I can't remember off the top of my head. It was down in Bournemouth. I remember watching them. They were headlining with support from Gojira.
Oh, wait, what? Hang on a second, because this was back in the Opus Eponymous days, yeah? But
yep.
Gojira were way, like, I imagine, way bigger than Ghost back then.
They were. And the funny thing was at that show was everyone was there to watch Gojira.
Yeah.
As soon as Gojira left, I'm not going to lie, about a good third of that crowd left afterwards.
I'm sure they did.
And I'm like, what's going on? Like, the best bit's about to happen.
Wow. That's crazy to me. I know at some festivals, for example, they do like the main headliner and then they do an after slot where it's like a big band, but they're not quite as big. And that's
it's like, for example, when I went to Grass Pop back in 2018, they did, I think it was something like Iron Maiden was headlining. And then straight after them on the second stage, which was right next to it, was Parkway Drive.
Yeah, it was the same for me at Hellfest that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was the same for me. So it wasn't a festival though, it was just a gig. Right?
What, the Gojira one?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was just a gig. That was just down in Bournemouth. I think I've got the poster somewhere lying around.
That's so weird. But, yeah. Also, that poster is probably worth money.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
More than lightly.
That poster is probably worth money, so I hope it's in a decent condition.
Oh, it's usually folded up and it's all in like a folder somewhere, so.
Oh man, you need to get that and send me a picture of that, please.
Yeah, if I can find it, I will dig it out and send it to you.
Thank you very much. So you're back on the show for Meliora.
Yep.
We talked about it a bit before, but I want to ask your general opinion on the album. You know, Meliora, for you, where does it rate?
Out of all the albums, it's my second favourite. Second to Infestacism. No, I can never say it.
I had a whole season of practicing, don't worry.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, that's second to that, but narrative-wise... it very much keeps in center of what Ghost is all about.
Mm.
It's the album I would say that gave them their biggest push to stardom. And, you know, bands like Metallica were like saying, oh, you know, we know this band Ghost, they're amazing. And then fast forward a few years, they're supporting Metallica.
Yeah.
But, you know, this album to me, narratively, still keeps within every single concept that is Ghost. But it is, again, another step up to that sort of mainstream headline sort of
musical style.
Yeah, basically. But I still feel it's possibly, you know, one of the most intriguing albums.
In the narrative sense of it.
In the narrative sense. You know, it's very sort of twists and turns, you know, about, you know, obviously the whole worshipping of Satan still, and, you know, the comings and goings of it.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think just from a personal perspective, I think there is a lot of narrative in it, but because of the change of musical style from all the way from Opus to here, it's harder to analyze because it's more stadium rocky. So it's a lot more repetitive lyrics in songs.
Very much. I think that's, I don't know if that's just a case of how Ghost were seeing things because they were getting that push. So are they trying to make these stadium ready anthems, you know, in the sense of dropping the narrative slightly, but you know, they still have the essence of what the band was always about.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like I'm not saying this is an insult. Meliora is my favorite Ghost album, but I'm just saying, for the purposes of the narrative of this show, that it is the hardest to analyze because of the more simplified lyrics.
Yeah.
I suppose you could
say. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's a lot more sort of ways you can take the lyrics, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So you've chosen to Come On He Is, and I'll admit it, it's not my favorite song of Ghost. In fact, it's one of my least favorite.
Actually, I'm the complete opposite. It's actually one of my top songs, actually.
Well, I was going to say, you mentioned that to me, like, why does this song ring true for you?
I think it's just a sense of getting to hear Ghost do a ballad in many sense, you know, taking away the doomy elements of it all and everything else, and hearing it being quite an uplifting sort of song. You know, for me, it's just a complete 180 on everything, from being that sort of having the song sound quite dropped and stuff in sort of the musical side of things.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that sort of feel where it's more uplifting.
But also at the same time, still subvertly Satanist.
Oh, God, yes, big time. I mean, as we'll talk about in a minute, it's just like, it is very satanic in the way of lyrics, in the way that it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, again, when we were talking earlier off air, it was a case that I was saying there's more undertones of like, not serial killer tones, but cultist tones.
Like cult leader tones.
Yeah, basically. And that's just from the aesthetic of what the band were looking like throughout the video of this. Like Jim Jones,
yeah,
who was head of the Jonestown cult, you know, forcing people to do things that they didn't want to do. But
yeah, we actually mentioned him in the very first episode of this season. You haven't heard it yet, because obviously we're recording it before that comes out. We actually mentioned him in the first episode. So it's interesting that you should say that.
Yeah, I mean, that's the vibes I've always got from it. And then especially when you compare the photos of Jim Jones to what Papa looked like in this, you know, very different.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, would you not argue that, and this is maybe slightly incorrect, that Cerise itself was a better traditional rock ballad, though?
Oh, big time, yeah. As a rock ballad, yes.
On the new album prequel, or the latest album prequel, did you enjoy Life Eternal, for example? Because it was kind of like He Is.
Yeah, it is. Again, I think I've compared this with friends before, that He Is and, sorry, which one was it? It was Life Eternal. Yeah, Life Eternal is very much like that. And it is, I do like ballads. I'm a sucker for a ballad.
You gotta love the Bon Jovi then, surely.
Oh, yeah. Oh, big time. I mean, you know, growing up, I was always into stuff like the glam scene, and I loved a good ballad that they would drop and stuff.
Nice. Well, I can only hope for both of our sakes that Ghost one day cover a Bon Jovi song, because that would be the that would be the pinnacle of music for me personally.
Or To The Pit.
Yeah, shut up. Yeah. Shall we get into the episode?
Let's do it.
Awesome. Okay, so going into this song, I want to discuss the sort of two options that I see this narrative taking, or well, two or three options that I see this narrative taking. I discussed this briefly with you before the show, because obviously, as I said, you haven't heard Cerise yet or any of the episodes. But for those that are listening in sequential order, so everybody else in the world, you will have heard last episode that in Cerise, I sort of was under the impression that Cerise was about a Christian hunter. I haven't really coined a phrase for that yet, who sort of hunted down Christians who were still in Satanist society and tried to convert them into Satanists, or convert them at least into the devil's gaze, or alternatively, you know, kill them.
So not quite Van Helsing.
No. So given that, either this song runs parallel to Cerise. So during the episode of Cerise, as I mentioned, there is, you know, some torture, maybe mind brainwashing stuff that goes on. So this could be either the perspective of that song, but from the Christian's head of while the brainwashing is going on, or this could be from the perspective afterwards of the brainwashed Christians, you know, that the Inquisitor in the former episode sort of brainwashed. Alternatively, the song could be from the perspective of a former Christian who is pretending to be a part of Satan's followers for his own safety in the new world. So whether he starts to believe properly as we go on into the song, that's something for us to discuss. So the first The first line, we're standing here by the abyss and the world is in flames. So, do you want to start it off or do you want me to start it off?
I mean, it depends which way you're looking at taking it. I mean...
Well, that's the beauty of the show. You tell me how you want to take it and then I'll jump in.
The way I'm reading this is just as a standalone song. It's basically looking at, like, there's a couple or somebody who have, you know, joined together to cast this ritual and basically bring forth Satan, or in this case, Papa, like the head of the cult.
Yeah.
So to me, it seems like they've already got a high opinion of this person that they want to bring forward and bring to the top.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Regarding this first line, what I've said here is, I think this opening line is a figurative description on how our narrator views the state of the world right now under the rule of Satan. So is it literally on fire? No.
Well, this is it. This is basically what it sounds like with Satan about, you know, being by the abyss. Are they stood next to where he's just come up?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is it literal or is it figurative? And I'm leaning towards figurative personally. Because,
oh, yeah.
You know, is the world literally on fire? Probably not. But the line, we're standing here by the abyss and the world is in flames, I see it more as a metaphor for the moral destruction caused by the abandonment of God. And he knew, like, our narrator knows that the world is on a tipping point over the edge to the abyss of hell. That's what I'm seeing it as.
That's exactly how I was seeing it as. You couldn't nail that more perfectly, I think.
Thank you very much. Do you want to move on to the next line?
Yeah, go for it.
Cool. Two star-crossed lovers reaching out to the beast with many names.
So on that, that's exactly what I had from the first one. With the two crossed lovers, is it two people that have cast this ritual or something, or they've done something to be able to bring forward the person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, one of them sounds very conflicted in that, is to being part of it. Well, for example, the two crossed, two star-crossed lovers. So yeah, they're probably meant to be together, but are they both on the side of doing what they're doing?
Something is keeping them apart. So you could see it as sort of an allegory for Romeo and Juliet, or a comparison to Romeo and Juliet even.
Yeah, essentially it. You know, two people that are in cross, they know they shouldn't be together, but they are.
They're in love, but on different sides, sort of thing.
Yeah. Essentially, it could be the case that it could be one of the, say, Satanists with a Christian person, and they know they shouldn't be together. They're going off in different directions, but they've crossed at this point.
That makes sense, yeah.
And now they're both calling out to the beast, which would obviously indicate Satan.
Okay, yeah, so you're of the opinion that this song isn't maybe from the perspective of them, but it's certainly about them?
Yes, essentially it, yeah.
Okay, so this is my take on it. Let's start off with the obvious line, which is a direct reference to Satan being the beast of many names, because, you know, that's what the devil is. He's the beast of many names. Lucifer.
Got to listen to Year Zero for that.
Beelzebub, the devil, yeah. Belial, blah, 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 blah. Star-crossed lovers, as you said, more of an interpretive line, and this is where our imagination needs to come into play. So, do I think this song is specifically about or from the perspective of these lovers? No, I do not.
No.
I think this song is describing what our narrator is seeing. Perhaps even a Christian and a Satanist couple. It could be taking place at a wedding, you know. It sounds very preachy, and the sound of the song would fit quite well at a wedding.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe he's in attendance at a wedding. But as I said here, again, and we've referenced it before, this is very much a case of Romeo and Juliet. You know, is it a Christian and a Satanist coming together as opposed to, you know, two rival kingdoms, but is it two rival religions who have fallen in love and trying to join an unholy matrimony, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, no, exactly. No, I can see where you come from on that, and seeing that it's from the perspective of somebody else.
Mm.
Makes sense in the sense of, you know, that they're watching them reaching out in the wording of that.
I'm of the opinion, just as we go on through the song, but I'm of the opinion that this isn't from the perspective of the things happening in Cerise. I think this is from the perspective of the former Christian that I mentioned, who is pretending to be part of Satan's followers, you know, just for his own safety in the world. You know, it makes a lot of sense, because he's not there with them, but he's judging them from his perspective.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, I can see where you come from on that.
So the next lines are, he's the shining and the light.
Yeah, and the
without whom light. I cannot see. I always say shining in the light. And so it's weird because, like, I have wrote the entire episode and I've just been like singing along. He's the shining in the light. I'm just like, oh yeah, that doesn't say
Shining and the light. No, I've done it many of times. I mean, to keeps changing it, so stop it.
Sorry, who?
I don't know. Who are you on about?
Nah, I don't know. Your words were bleeped out randomly. It's fucking,
oh, wow.
Fucking weird, man.
Oh, man. What? How do you do that?
It's magic, man. It's magic.
Oh, man.
But yeah, so what I've got here is that this line is a direct reference to Lucifer, obviously. Often referred to as Lucifer Morningstar. This line can be taken both figuratively and literally. Figuratively, he is shining his light on the population of the world to lead them through the dark times, and by becoming their sun, the center of their universe. So yeah, that's sort of what I got from that. What about you?
Yeah, no, I think I've literally got on my notes here, he is, and I've just put in capitals, Satan.
Satan. I mean, that can sum up pretty much the entire podcast, to be honest.
Yeah, pretty much. But where did I go from there? I went, I've put on there that they feel like they need this individual in their life, where it says here, without whom I cannot see.
Mm-hmm.
They need this person here. They need, you know, if it be Satan or whoever, the Papa or somebody, you know, somebody that they cannot go without in their life.
Yeah. Hence, you know, your reasoning or your feeling of cult leader-ish.
Yeah, basically. He's looking up to the cult leader and saying, you know, without this person, we wouldn't all be here. He is basically everything. He is our shining light. He is everything we want, you know. And from the person watching it from the outside, it's like watching everyone going, well, how is it, you know, why is it you need this person?
Mm.
You know, what is it that's so special about this person?
I mean, you could say, not to make people question it or whatever, but you could say that of really any religion or cult, really.
Well, yeah,
like,
exactly.
For people like me and you who don't, well, I assume you, who don't believe in religion or believe in God or believe in anything like that, it is obviously understandable but strange to us that people will live their lives based on the opinions of, well, to us is that it's something that's not real, but to them it's everything. To them it's completely real.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things, I suppose, that you could compare cult religions or cult leaders and cults to religion and vice versa, I suppose.
Yeah, basically, yeah. No, you got it.
Shall we do the next lines?
Go for it.
Cool. And he is insurrection, he is spite, he's the force that made me be.
Again, can't go without him.
Yeah.
Again, they feel more empowered around this person. They feel like they bring the best out in them.
Well, actually, no. Upon thinking about it, I was going to argue, obviously, a cult leader wouldn't make someone be, but that's not necessarily true. You don't need to bring them into existence. You just need to make them into the person that they are today or the person that they are when they're worshipping you.
That's the part of the brainwashing.
Hmm. So the made me be part doesn't necessarily mean Satan or God brought me into existence. It could be they made
this
me who I am.
This person has made me see the way.
Mm.
Yeah, they've made me see the way.
Mm. Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I have down here, it's another line directly referencing Satan and his history with God.
Well, yeah. Referring
to him as insurrection is, you know, quite clearly he was the one angel that attempted to rebel against God.
Exactly.
That's
what
insurrection is.
Yeah.
You could argue that spite is caused by his loss and the years spent in hell, spiting God for his suffering and defeat.
Yeah.
So,
again, a very Christian way of looking at things.
I don't really think of it that way from myself. Obviously, as I said, I'm not a Christian, but I was brought up on Christianity.
Hey,
so
we've only heard one side of the story, and that was God's book. Where's Satan's book?
That's true. That's true.
Who's the petty one here?
It's true, but yeah, maybe the years spent in like Catholic school and, you know, my family and stuff are Christians. I have no problem with Christians myself.
I've got no problem with it myself either. I mean, you know, everyone's entitled to what they want to believe in, and if it makes them feel better in life, then by all means go for it.
Exactly. Yeah, I just don't personally believe in it, but maybe I see it from that perspective because of the upbringing that I had and the school that I went to. Could be.
And now you feel yourself, all your sins washing away. Or washing back on, whichever way you want to look at it.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. No, actually, you know, yeah, no, my catchphrase is literally "Hail Satan." I don't think I'm getting into heaven if it is real.
Brilliant.
Right, next lines, and you're gonna have to bear with me on these ones.
No, go for it. This is Latin. I will give you a pass on this. Yeah. It's Latin.
He is nostro dispater, nostra alma mater. He is. Jesus, yeah. That's hard. That last one's really hard to say.
That last bit is
nostra alma mater. Nostra Alma Mater. I'm sure someone I'm sure someone in the listeners like speaks Italian, which sort of has runoffs from Latin, will be like, "Nope, yep. That's wrong." I apologize.
No, we'll get all kinds of letters in on this one.
Yeah, probably. And then obviously he is. I'll start this off. Let's first translate both of the phrases mentioned. As you said, they're in Latin, although both of them are far from correct in Latin, so there is some speculation.
Yeah,
little known fact about ghost songs: a lot of ghost songs Latins are bullshit.
Oh yeah, big time. I mean, I was struggling to try and decipher this one. I've literally got possibly the first half to it, the second half.
Yeah, no, it was I had to do a bit of digging. But yeah, Nostro Dispater can either be translated into our unholy father, our loving father, or father of riches.
Oh, so, see, I've got father of our push.
There is also that, but I didn't really understand. Well,
I didn't understand that one myself, to be honest.
Keep that in mind, actually, because I have an idea. Now that you've said it out loud, do you ever read something and it's like, that doesn't make sense, but then someone says then something. Go. Yeah, yeah. So keep then that in clicks. Mind. We'll get back to that. And Nostra Alma Mater translates to our nurturing mother or something thereabouts.
Ah, that's what it means. Okay. Mm. I had Nostra as frost.
Okay.
I don't know why, but when I typed in, it came up saying frost. I'm interesting. Like, what's that got to do with anything?
Hmm. Diving a bit deeper into it, there is one extra bit of nuance in the first line, Nostro Dispater. Dispater was actually the original god of the underworld before Hades took over.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay, so they've gone pre-devil.
Back to the thing you were mentioning about the push, because I did find that in my researches, and I have neglected to mention it here because it didn't make any sense. But now that you said that, the father of our push, could it be that the narrator is referencing the very first line of the song, that he is the father that's going to push them into the abyss that they're standing on the edge of?
Ah, well, now you say that, that actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah.
No, that makes perfect sense, especially with Father of Our Push, because it's a case that the cultist is trying to get everyone around the idea of what he's trying to preach, but then he's pushing them into, you know, following them, essentially.
Pushing them into destruction, which I said this before in the first episode, you haven't heard it, but I will say it again. If you think this show is going to end with a happy ending, you haven't been paying attention. This isn't going to be good.
I mean, this is Ghost. This is Ghost. This isn't, you know, Christmas and butterflies and stuff, so...
Yeah, exactly. It could be that he's calling Satan or even Papa, you know, either one. He could be the one that's pushing them over the edge into oblivion.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, it's how would you look at it? Would you say that Papa or whoever the cultist is, in the sense, is pushing them into the light? But from the outside perspective, pushing them into abyss, like you've been saying.
If we look at this from the perspective of a Christian who is only pretending to believe in Satan, of course he's going to think that.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
So he knows that even though he's in church, let's brum the idea that this is all in a wedding, right? Maybe this is part of the ceremony, okay? So maybe this is just one of the things that they say during a ceremony. Everyone else is saying it, you know, as an actual worship, but he's thinking this, he's thinking, even though I'm saying this, what? He is the one that's pushing humanity towards its end. And by him, I mean Satan.
Or take this setup. You got the wedding happening. The bride and the groom are both the cult leader and a girl that the father is pushing into the marriage of this cult leader.
Hmm, interesting. So you think the star-crossed lovers is, you think one of them is Papa?
Yeah, basically. If the groom was Papa and, you know, the father of this person's like, you've got to marry Papa to be able to, you know, push forward and become something bigger and better in this world because, you know, that's where they got them into brainwashed into.
Yeah.
It's just another way of looking at it.
Fair enough, yeah. What I've said here, and it sort of goes against what you've just said, unfortunately.
No.
I don't see this as a literal thing. As I said, I see this like a prayer. So what I see this as is the beginning of a prayer, like the trifecta. So it's their version of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. Like, this is what they say before they say a prayer.
Or is it a hymn? Because it's all in song.
Well, I mean, all ghost songs could be hymns.
But they're just scriptures as well, so.
Exactly. I'm of the belief that that's sort of like the Our Father, you know, the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit, blah, 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 prayer following bit. I think that's what that means, personally. I think that's what that is.
No, I'm with you on that, yeah.
Cool. So shall we move on to the next line?
Let's do it. This is where my notes are going to start getting hazy because I thought I saved all my notes. I didn't. And now, just before coming on, I had to rush through my notes again.
Nice. We're hiding here. We're hiding here inside a dream, and all our doubts are now destroyed. The guidance of the morning stars will lead the way into the void. It could also be morning star singular.
Yeah, again, yeah.
So I seeing as your notes were erased, I'll take this part.
Go for it. Go.
I'll begin this so you can chime in on your thoughts.
Yeah.
So this is a great line because it could be in reference to this particular narrator's personal thoughts and feelings or a reference to the world at large. And we'll break down both the options to see which one fits the best. So for option one, the narrator's thoughts and feelings. This could be the turning point where the narrator is finally coming around from pretending to actually worshipping Satan, with his doubts being destroyed. The music itself gives the feeling of someone wandering through a haze. In this case, the haze of doubt towards the fall of God that is instead broken by the light of Satan. So, in other words, you know, maybe the narrator, in this case, the Christian who is pretending to be a Satanist, maybe he's been sort of confused because obviously everything he knew is being destroyed. You know, God is gone and he doesn't really know what to do. And finally, he's seeing that bright light of Satan's gaze or Satan's glow, I suppose you could say.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you look at it in the fact that, you know, where it says that they're hiding in a dream, inside a dream, you know, they could be seen as, is Christianity a dream? You know, is it really a thing that's so true to this world? And then when you look at the fact that it says there that all our doubts are now destroyed.
Yeah.
You know, it's the case that Christianity could be based on a lot of doubts in things, whereas Satanism could be looked at as being very forward with things. You know, there's no looking back. There is no doubts on things. It's done because it's done.
True.
Whereas Christianity is like, well, if we do this, what is the consequences of our actions?
Yeah, it's very true. It's very true. One last note on that particular part is, even though the path leads downwards, so the last line, the guidance of the morning star will lead the way into the void. Even though the path leads downwards, the narrator no longer cares. That's option one. Option two is the general population. Similar to thoughts and feelings of the narrator himself, perhaps the narrator is describing what he sees as a dream, or more appropriately, a nightmare in his case, of the population blindly following Satan with no doubts as to who their leader is now. However, because the narrator is not fully convinced yet, he sees that the light of the morning stars, Satan and the Antichrist, because there is two of them, remember, is leading mankind into a void it can't escape from, even if their followers are too blind to see it. So, which is it, in your opinion? Is it option A, Christian has now turned Satanist? Is it option B, Christian sees the downfall of humanity and is still pretending to be a Satanist in an effort not to get hunted down and converted / killed?
I'm going to go with option A.
So you think he's been converted?
Yes, only in the sense for the fact that he then, when we get into the next part of the song, going back to the chorus, you know, he's reiterating these things back to himself and it's like he's convincing himself.
Yeah.
So I think he's finally come to the way of looking at things, you know, and there is one particular line that changes towards the end of this.
Yeah.
Which this, kind of binds
the disobedience
that theory
that holds us together.
That's exactly it. So, you know, is it the fact that where Satanism is basically based on disobedience, you know, or, well, actual Satanists might say otherwise, but in this sense, you know, the disobedience that has been happening, you know, worshipping Satan is being a disobedience. That's what's holding everyone together right now. So that's what is bringing them all together. It's what's, you know, what could be seen as like the true perspective of life, bringing everyone together in this disobedience, in this chaos that's going on, that is the rise of Satan.
Okay, I get you. As we're discussing the final line, I'll put forward what I've got on the final line, and then we can decide overall.
Go for it.
The final unique line of the song is the disobedience that holds us together, and one that doesn't have, well, really, there's not a lot to go on, but either it is, as you said, a reference to, you know, the general population, etc., feeling togetherness under the guide of Satan, or, and this is sort of wrapping things back around, it is the final vow of the couple at the wedding from the start of the song, swearing their lives to each other as well as Satan.
Yeah, true. Very true. I can see that.
So maybe this entire song takes place at a wedding.
It seems more and more that way. The fact that you put the wedding in my head and trying to fit this all in into like the full ceremony of a wedding. It's very fitting now you've said this.
But which is it though? I think it's at a wedding, as you said. I think it's at a satanic wedding.
Yeah, I think
wedding,
it's at a wedding.
But our narrator, is he convinced?
I don't know. This is very difficult. I think it's like the turning point for him. the actual seeing of this happening, in him sort of battling with himself and going, well, actually, what if this is the way? What if this is how we need to deal with the world and how we should be looking at things? You know, is it really Christianity that's brought us here, or is it Satanism? I think it's in that wedding, I think the character is seeing themselves as just turning and getting the cogs together now.
What if I pitched you this? What if I pitched you that the narrator was actually the father of the bride the whole time? And the fact that he's a star-crossed lover is because the daughter is still technically Christian because she was baptized Christian, but she's marrying a Satan.
Which is
marrying a Satanist.
That's where I brought back earlier about the daughter of a father marrying Papa.
Oh, I didn't know you meant that it was his daughter. I thought you just meant it was a daughter.
No. As in, it could be like the daughter of the person who's
singing the song, who's narrating the song.
It could be.
Interesting. I am going to say that, in my opinion, I think that he hasn't come round to it, personally. I think he's still pretending. I don't think he's
still
been.
Thinks pretending?
Yeah, I don't think he's been quite convinced because
What if I told you there is one more line to the song we haven't looked at?
Okay. I would be awfully shocked because I don't have it. But what is it?
So the last line is, and we are falling over the precipice.
Oh my God. Yes, it is. I don't know why that isn't on my notes.
So are they finally falling into that void of Satanism?
Yeah. I knew there was something missing from my notes, and thanks for putting that.
I think that just that one line, as soon as we were saying that, I was just looking at the lyrics here myself and I was going, oh, there's one more, and actually that brings it all together.
Yeah, okay, given that line, I have been swayed to agree with you. In fact, he has been convinced, and him, his daughter, and if it's Papa marrying Papa, and basically the whole world from his perspective is now going into the abyss, falling over the precipice of the abyss towards Satan's rule.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, well, thank you very much for bringing that line up, because I don't know what happened to it. I love that line. I don't know why I didn't remember it.
Yeah, no, as soon as I saw it, and I'm sort of singing it in my head, I'm like, oh yeah, of course that's there.
Yeah.
It's right at the end.
Ah. Feel so silly. Anyway.
So do I.
Anyway, let's wrap up this episode of The Gospel of Ghost Pickles. Thank you very much for joining me.
No, thank you for having me. It's been brilliant to be back.
No problem. I would ask you on for the next season, but there isn't going to be one. So, I will say thank you very much for all your contributions to the podcast. And I will turn around to the listeners and say, again, thank you very much for listening. And thank you very much for supporting us on the social medias at Gospel of Ghost. I will see you next week for Mummy Dust. Hail Satan.